County cricket, international cricket, test cricket, franchise cricket, red ball, white ball, 100-ball cricket. At The Cricketer, we care about the cricket you love. And that's why we've launched a brand new app built for fans of the English game. Download The Cricketer app and sign up to our Access All Areas Pass to receive agenda-setting journalism and illuminating storytelling straight to your phone. The latest news from the England camps, a dedicated daily service for fans of the 18 first-class counties, and committed coverage of women's cricket. Download the app today and enjoy 1 month for free unlimited access. The Cricketer. We care about the cricket you love.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the County Cricket Podcast in association with our friends at Bear Cricket. I'm your host, Aaron, aka The Cricket Connoisseur, and on my left for today's special episode of TCCP is none other than Kent County Cricket Club's performance analyst, Michael Nyden. So, Michael, first things first, mate, thank you very much for joining me here on the podcast today. It's an absolute pleasure to get you on for a chat about all things county cricket. I have to ask, mate, how's your day been so far?
Thanks, Aaron. Thanks for that intro as well. It's a pleasure to be invited to be on your esteemed podcast. Yeah, it's been a lovely day so far. It's a beautiful day here in Canterbury, and I'm just sat in the analyst room, which is very warm, even though it's cold outside. But yeah, beautiful day, just overlooking the ground, and it's, yeah, looking in great shape. So yeah, been a good day so far.
Honestly, Michael, that's making me a tad bit envious. It's a beautiful ground, isn't it? The Spitfire ground in Canterbury. I went there this year for the quarterfinal, vociferous support. It's a lovely open ground as well, isn't it? So I must admit, your background looking a lot better than mine. It's quite chilly here in Shakespeare's County today. But yeah, have you been busy today so far, Michael, in terms of the analysis? What have you been up to this morning?
Yeah, so at the moment, probably the second half of the winter, you start to look ahead to the season coming, really. So it's all about preparation. So looking at the opposition teams that we're going to play in all formats, preparing for the first few games. So preparing videos, preparing data, preparing the dossiers and opposition teams that I produce. So yeah, it's just a bit of that at the moment. So obviously, it's a bit more quiet at the moment, just starting after Christmas. But yeah, before Christmas was a bit busier, sort of looking back at the season, looking exactly what went on, what we did well, what we did badly, and comparing ourselves to the other sides in each competition. So yeah, it's sort of split into two the winter, and at the moment, it's more looking forward and preparing for the games that are going to come up in 2-3 months.
I know it's not that far away, is it? At all now, county cricket.
And it goes so quickly after Christmas. It's unbelievable.
We mentioned that with Paul Franks. It's like you have the build up to Christmas, and it's like, I'll tell you from a fan's perspective, it's like, oh, there's no county cricket for months. Christmas comes, it's New Year, and all of a sudden it's like, wait a minute, county cricket's around the corner again now. We can, you know, be a bit more upbeat, excited, winter's on its way out and spring's almost here. But honestly, 2022 has got the makings of such an interesting county season. I cannot wait. I cannot wait to cover it on the shows here on the podcast, at the grounds as well. It's just got the makings of a really fascinating and compelling season across formats as well. And we'll discuss this in a bit more detail as today's podcast progresses. But Michael, actually, you mentioned already something which I wanted to discuss in today's podcast, and that is the day in the life of a cricket analyst. Because I know a few budding analysts out there, they want to know a bit more about the role in terms of the job, what it actually entails. Could you just give us a bit more of an insight into the day of a cricket analyst in a county club?
Wow, yeah, it varies greatly. It's such a sort of, I suppose, a general role. There's a lot that comes under the role. But yeah, during the summer, it's pretty crazy with matches. There's so many matches going on. So you're always sort of looking ahead to the next match, and that game comes so quickly. But sort of a day or two before a game, you'd be setting up the cameras, setting up the scaffolding for each end, or perhaps at the sides as well. And then you'd be preparing perhaps a pre-match presentation, looking at the strengths, weaknesses of opposition teams. Providing information to the players on our sort of portal, so the players have got a few days to look ahead to the match, look at who their opposition team players are, and sort of prepare that way. So yeah, it's pretty varied. 1 minute you could be setting up the scaffolding, next minute you're doing some data analysis or visualization, preparing for an upcoming fixture just to show to the players in your sort of pre-match booklet. And then, yeah, during the day, you get the game pretty early. You're, again, checking the cameras, checking all the software and hardware's okay. And then once the game starts, it's pretty full on. You're tagging, coding every ball that's bowled. So you're sort of setting the camera, and once the bowler runs up, yeah, you're starting the film. Once the sort of player action's finished, stopping the film. And then during that time, then you're adding details such as where the ball pitched, where the ball passed the bats, wagon wheel data, what type of shots, events, connection types, delivery types. Yeah, so a huge amount of data really that you're adding to each ball, every ball that's bowled. So it's quite a full on. Yeah, 4-day game is obviously quite tough, quite tiring, and the T20 game is shorter but a lot more intense. And then, yeah, then after that, you're sort of looking back at the game, perhaps finding some key points, where the game was won, where the game was lost, and then again moving on to the next game, preparation for that. You do get obviously a few more quieter periods during the season where you could perhaps sort of look at a periodic review of how the season's gone, how you're doing compared to other sides, and a few things might come up that you might pass on to the coaches or the players. But yeah, it's pretty full on during the summer. And as I previously mentioned, in the winter, it's sort of first few 2-3 months are looking back, what we did well, what we did badly, in terms of, yeah, particularly benchmarking ourselves, benchmarking our players in terms of their, compared to their peers. And then second half is looking forward, prep for the season and putting yourself in a good position to sort of we'll be all set up for the first few games.
It's a demanding job, isn't it? It really is. The life of an analyst is so full on. It's an incredible job, though. It's one which I absolutely adore as a cricket badger. And one of the main roles of the analyst in county cricket is coding. Now, for those out there who don't know what coding is, Michael, could you just give us a greater insight into what that role, what's it made up of? Just how important is coding in the role of a cricket analyst?
Obviously, we use the data. So the data, but if you're inputting poor data, if the coding's not done well, badly, then obviously the data that you're getting out of that and the data that you're analysing has errors in. So you're not able to use it as well. So yeah, it's pretty important to be able to code properly. And it's, yeah, you just get into a bit of a routine where you don't really think about it. It just sort of happens. I mean, I've done it for 8 years now, and you just sort of automatically know where everything is and you don't really think about it. But yeah, it's quite a tiring job because you obviously got to concentrate a lot and there's a lot of clicking involved. For each ball, you're sort of doing, I don't know, 12, 15 clicks of the ball. So it's, yeah, it's quite, yeah, it's very time consuming during a 4-day game and quite tiring, but it's quite good fun. Obviously, you're sat there watching the cricket. Yeah, it's a really good job.
It is. It is. It's one which I, to be honest, wouldn't mind doing, but I also like the commentary aspect. So I don't know. We'll have to wait and see where cricket takes me as a career path. But I have a lot of respect for cricket analysts. It is a demanding job, but in the modern game of cricket, it's so important, isn't it? Considering all the data that we have at our fingertips, we're just beginning to uncover just how important cricket data is to the game. And I imagine that we're going to see a lot more of it as time passes in this field and in this industry. And in terms of coding, Michael, would you say that is the toughest aspect of your job? Or is there another role, another department of cricket analysis, which is even tougher? What are your thoughts on that?
I'm not a great fan of heights. So I'd say one of the tougher parts of the job is setting up the scaffolding, setting up the cameras and climbing the scaffolding and then putting the camera up. So yeah, that's quite a tough part of it for me, but it's just sort of something that you sort of get used to a bit and you just get on with. And yeah, so that's quite a tough part. I mean, coding's tough from a sort of time perspective and it can be quite tiring, like I say, but it's also quite an enjoyable part of the job as well, being able to see, particularly when the team are doing well and be able to watch cricket really. And like I said, a lot of the time you're watching the cricket and you're automatically coding the game. So it's really, yeah, it's really good fun. I mean, the tough part of the job is probably the volume of matches. Like I mentioned, it's pretty intense during the season. So yeah, like I say you've got a match and then you may have another match starting a day later. So while perhaps other people, you can get a day off or a morning off, the analyst is there either unpacking the stuff from the last game or looking at what we did well, what we did badly from the last game, or preparing a team for a team meeting the next day or setting up cameras for another wicket that we've moved along. That's quite tough. Another part, I reckon, would be quite keeping a handle on all the sort of players coming and goings. And it can be quite difficult, particularly last year with COVID, and quite a few players were out and quite a few players were coming in that you perhaps didn't have as much information and video on. So, yeah, that's quite a challenge last year, I would say.
Well, I wanted to touch upon that because last year we had the Muck Spitfires, the Scottish lads, the likes of George Muncie, Callum McLeod, Safian Sharif, to name but a few. How difficult was that for you as the analyst? Because these are players who there will be data for, but you don't have it at your fingertips. Was that difficult initially to actually gather some data on those players and almost implement them into the team environment?
Well, some of those players we sort of knew of. We knew we'd keep an eye on the data and a lot of the information from the local leagues. And a few of those players have been playing the second team. Obviously, we keep a close eye on their numbers and coaches see them quite close up. So that was it wasn't too difficult. But from an opposition analyst perspective, that's a bit of a nightmare, really, because some of the players have played second team cricket and there's more and more data and video available for these players now. But some of the players that may not have played second team cricket that may be playing in Scotland, you may have less video and data available. So you're going in a bit more blind than you would be if you were playing the normal team.
Maybe that's why the McSpitfires did so well then and finished top of the South Group. Eh? No, they were fantastic. I must admit, they did their job, didn't they? And Kent, as we all know, went on to lift the trophy for the first time in 14 years at Edgbaston on finals day, which we'll touch upon in more detail as today's podcast progresses. I know the Kent fans will definitely want me to talk about that and maybe a certain catch from Jordan Cox on the boundary towards the Hollies as well. But we've mentioned so far here a lot about the data, about the analysis itself. And I suppose that brings me nicely onto our conversation about cricket statistics, because as many people know from the podcast, I absolutely love my stats. I can reel them off like a machine gun. Like Sam Hain, his list average, 59.78. It's the highest in history, higher than Kohli, higher than Michael Bevan. And yet the guy still hasn't made his England debut. So again, I've got some pretty strong opinions on that. But Michael, in your opinion, how important are stats to you personally? Because this is very subjective. You'll have players maybe in the modern era, like an Owen Morgan with his analyst, Nathan Lehman, and they will trust the data a lot. They'll trust the stats. They'll utilise averages, strike rates, economy rates to formulate plans during a game and to almost, create different tactics in a match environment. On the flip side of that, though, you've got players, usually older players, like Ian Chappell, for example. I know that Sunil Gavaskar isn't really into his stats either. They're more of an old school gut feel kind of approach to cricket. In your view, just how important are stats, in your opinion? Do you think that stats are really important? Do you think there's a bit of nuance with regards to the topic itself? What are your thoughts on stats in cricket? It's an interesting question.
Yeah, I mean, I'm obviously going to say they're very important, but there is a balance to be had between statistics and using the gut feel as well. And it'd be rare you'd ever get a decision made totally just on the stats. Obviously, it's a decision, really, and it helps you perhaps point you in a direction, perhaps gives you a lead, and then it's based on the gut feel of the coaches, the captain, other players. So it's, I think it's very important, and it's only going to increase over the next, many years, but there's always a balance, and probably more important than just the statistics is the way they're given over to the players, the way they're given over to the coaches, and the way they're communicated properly, because you can have the best stats in the world, but if the players aren't, they're not given to the players in the right format, and the players don't listen, and they're presented in a bad way, perhaps, then they're pretty sort of irrelevant, really. So there's a case for obviously statistics important, but more important is communicating that in the right way and building relationships with players and coaches so that they can be communicated in the right way. And so it's sort of a two-way street. The players or coach can come to you and ask for stats, and you can hand them to the players and coach and speak to them and have an open conversation about that. And it starts a conversation, really.
100%. And another thing that's important with regards to stats, and this is coming from someone who is an absolute badger, loves his averages, strike rates, economy rates, as many people who listen to the podcast will know. You do have to take into consideration the intangibles. So context is a massive, massive thing when it comes to stats, because you can have someone averaging 50 plus, but they might be doing it on flat tracks. They might be doing it against substandard bowling attacks, and they just have big knock after big knock. When you put them in a different environment, that could all change. It really could. And in a different match situation as well, let's say, for example, someone usually in a match where you're trying to win a game scores 29 from 300 balls, that's not very good. However, if it's 29 from 300 or a Hashim Amla-esque style defense at the Oval, then it's a bit different. You have to take that into consideration. You can't just take it as a concrete number. There is context behind it, which I think is important in the world of statistics. And at Kent, Michael, are the players quite open to the analysis, to the stats, to the data? Do they take it on board, per se?
Yeah, the players are really, really good now. Particularly some of the bowlers during the T20 comp were excellent. They were almost doing their own research, looking at players. I was providing them with information and they were looking up other stats, looking up other video, making their own notes on players, adding to my notes. And they were coming to team meetings with, really, really well prepared. So I think it's, the players have sort of grown up with it now as well. I think perhaps when I first started, it was sort of a relatively new thing in the dressing room and players hadn't used it a huge amount. So although they perhaps thought it was good and perhaps were interested in a few things, at the time they were mainly using sort of video to watch opposition teams or watch their own good knocks or when they've struggled. Whereas I think now the data has become more and more important. And like I say, the players have sort of grown up with it. It's there on TV productions, when you see Quickfish stats, Hawkeye stats. And obviously when you see football and Monday Night Football and you see Gary Neville and Jamie Carragher going through expected goals and things like that in football. So it's just sort of totally normalised stats now, really. And a lot of the players are really into it and they're really interested. And at the end of the season, you get a lot of the players coming to you asking about where they rank compared to their peers and in certain periods of the game, how do they compare to other players? What are their strengths, weaknesses? What type of bowling do they do well? What time bowling they struggle against? Obviously, bowlers to right hand and left hand, you get that comment quite a lot over and around the wicket. So, a lot of them are really keen and coming forward. So I've got a pretty good relationship with most of them and decent friends with most of them. So, it's pretty chilled. It's not sort of forcing stats on them or sort of making them look at something, but a lot of them are open to using stats to try and improve the performance.
Well, that's very nice to hear. Very, very good indeed. So they're very open and receptive to the stats, the data and the analysis that you provide. That is very nice to hear from a Kent perspective. And you mentioned it there, Michael, and we have to bring this up because I speak about this every time we talk about analysis, matchups. It is almost the word of the day now in modern cricket in particular. In T20 cricket, you hear it on the commentary feeds every single game. As an analyst yourself, how important, how integral are matchups in your analysis?
They are quite important, but I just laugh because it's, matchups has become more of like a buzzword recently, whereas I think most analysts and most teams are probably using matchups without calling them matchups probably for quite a long time. But they are really important. We obviously do quite a lot on that and look for where we match up and where our strengths and weaknesses can compare to other sides and different bowlers to bowl at different stages to different batsmen to sort of nullify their strengths and their strengths. It is quite a big thing. I think it's become a bigger thing recently in the media. And it goes through every match where you can't hear about them. Everything to do with matchups.
Mm-hmm. It is. I mean, during the T20 World Cup, for example, you'd hear it every single game. Whenever someone who's left-handed walks out to the crease, get the off-spinner on. It was every single time. It's absolutely hilarious. But again, it can be important at times. And when it pays off, it is a little bit of a stroke of genius at times. But then again, cricket's a funny game. Just because the matchup's there, just because the stats are saying that you should go for one option doesn't mean it's always going to pay off. cricket's unpredictable, and that's something else which we need to take into consideration when we discuss about stats and data and analysis. And that leads me nicely onto our conversation about Kent as a club. And in terms of the different analysis that you utilise across formats, because here in England and Wales, aside from the 100, that's technically the fourth format, but we don't play that here in county cricket. You've got the first class competition, the county championship, the List A competition, the Royal London One Day Cup, and the T20, which is, of course, the T20 Blast, of which Kent are the reigning champions. Michael, how does your analysis differ between those competitions and those formats? What ways does your data actually change depending on the format type?
I'd probably say there's a greater depth to our sort of white ball stats, T20 and 50 over stats. And like you say, we use matchups and things like that. But I'd say that probably the difference is it's more tailored to specific players of such as specific roles in the white ball game. Whereas red ball, we would have a team meeting, but everyone would be involved and it would be a bit more general, a bit more looking at players, looking at their strengths, weaknesses, looking at how they get out of the dismissals. Whereas in T20, a bit more personal, a bit more specialised to their exact role. So looking at exactly our power play bowlers, how are they going to bowl against the power play batters of the opposition side and where are their scoring errors? Spinners through the middle overs, who's going to bowl against who, and what the field placing is going to be, what happens if, and we look at scenarios sort of thing. Whereas, like I said, Red Bull was a bit more general. So that would probably be the biggest thing, a bit more specialist, personalised sort of analysis for the T20 comp.
That's expected as well, because it's a bit more frenetic, isn't it, in terms of the field placements. You've got the power play. The death overs can be chaos in the T20 Blast as well. We spoke with Gus Atkinson, who in one game, he took two wickets and I think conceded about 7-8 runs in an over. And then against Glamorgan in the very next game, 24 runs in a single over. It's just that it's the nature of the beast in T20 cricket. It's just carnage.
Yeah, as you say, it's chaos. So it's also not providing too much information as well, making sure the players have clear plans. So that's obviously the skill of the analyst. And sometimes, perhaps when I first started, you almost tried to provide too much information, whereas now it's just providing the most relevant information for those specific players so they can just focus on, they know exactly what their plans are when they're going out to bowl at a certain batsman at a certain period of the game. Just taking that uncertainty away, really.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up, because if we could expand upon that, the relevant information, let's take a death bowler in T20 cricket. In terms of the data, in terms of the stats, what are the biggest elements of your dossier to death bowlers? How does that differ from a power play bowler or a spin bowler in the middle overs? What are those key pieces of info for death bowlers in particular?
Well, I think death bowlers, obviously, you're always looking at economy rates, but also boundary percentages become more and more important, stopping the boundaries. That's been key. Power play bowlers, you're looking at more taking wickets, strike rates. Perhaps the middle overs, you're looking more, again, wicket-taking options, also dot ball percentages, and still boundary percentages, preventing boundaries. And as you've shown the stats about the team that wins the boundary count wins 80, 85% of matches. So obviously that's a key area that we try to win.
I have heard that stat. And actually, that came up in a very interesting podcast I did with David Ripley, because in 2013, Northamptonshire became very stats-driven. They almost adopted a sabermetric style of statistical approach when it came to county cricket. And I wanted to ask about this, Michael, in your opinion, I know that in cricket, we can't exactly replicate sabermetrics because we don't have a large enough data set. But are you one of these people who believes that maybe with a bit more data, a bit more time in this industry, we could almost replicate that at some point?
Yes, I'm sure going forward, that's the way it's going to happen. To be honest, you'll get more data scientists, data analysts. Data's becoming more and more important. So yes, I'm sure that's the way it's going.
Fantastic. You can tell that we're into our data, can't you, listeners? Yeah, we are absolutely grinning like two Cheshire cats on today's podcast. This is why I love getting analysts on, you know, just discussing, conversing about analysis. It's brilliant. It's honestly such an interesting aspect of the game, and it's a growing part of the game as well, isn't it? Which I don't think we've quite touched upon fully But there's so much more data, there's so much more stats, so much more analysis out there. And we are literally, we're probably just at the tip of the iceberg. There's a lot more to uncover. And yeah, it's going to be very, very interesting in the future, you know, the way in which cricket analysis goes. I'm very, very excited to see how it goes as well. But before we go on to the future, Michael, because I wanted to discuss that at some length in terms of where you feel like the industry is going, I just want to go back to the dossier slightly, because we've talked about how it differs between formats. But how does your analysis differ between players? And what I mean by this is, let's say you've got a dossier for Darren Stevens, a county veteran, 20 plus years. We all know him as the GOAT, and he should have played for England. In my opinion, an absolute titan of county cricket. How does his dossier differ from that of a newcomer, such as a Jaskaran Singh? How does those, you know, those piece of analysis differ between bowlers and players of different experiences?
Yeah, it's interesting, but every player has different preferences, really. Every player, some players are heavy on their stats, some players are heavy on the video. Some players want data and stats on their performance. They want to know where they can improve, what their strengths and weaknesses. Other players want stats on the opposition, where their strengths and weaknesses. Some players want everything. So yeah, I mean, with someone like Steve-O, he wouldn't be massively into stats, but I've got a decent relationship with him, and you just drop it into conversation, really, in terms of some of his stats. I was talking to him last season, really, in terms of when he performs. There's a general perception, I think, that Steve-O does really well at the start and at the start of the season in April and at the end of the season in September, and then between that, he probably doesn't do very well. But that's not actually how the stats sort of show it, really. So yeah, I was just discussing that with him, then found out that when sort of his best periods were and when his worst periods were. So I think, yeah, with someone like Steve-O, you wouldn't bombard him with stats, and he wouldn't be that interested in loads of stats, but he's still interested in the game, interested in hearing numbers about himself, and he probably focuses more on his own game, I would say, rather than some of the younger players focus on their game, but then also wants more information on the opposition team as well. So yeah, again, it's always a balance, and it's about knowing the players, building a relationship with the players, knowing who to perhaps use more stats, more data with, and who to perhaps, yeah, just drop the odd stat here and there in. So yeah, you've just got to get to know the players, really, get to know their preferences.
Good advice for any budding analysts out there. Make those key connections, those key relationships. And from what I'm gathering from today's conversation, definitely don't adopt a one-size-fits-all approach. You have to tailor in individual needs, individual wants. That's very, very interesting to hear. And thank you for that, Michael. That's a very, very interesting insight into the world of cricket analysis. And I think that's a nice place, actually, to pick up where I wanted to end today's conversation. And that is the future of cricket analysis, because it is a fascinating world. It's an industry which is growing year in, year out. We as fans have got more data than ever at our fingertips. Where do you think the future of cricket analysis lies, in both maybe a county, so a domestic environment, and beyond that at the international level? Where do you think that the industry is heading into the rest of the 2020s and beyond?
Yeah, I mean, I can only see the use of data increasing, really. As I spoke previously, data scientists and data analysts will become more and more involved. And yeah, in terms of perhaps the analyst at counties, I see them more almost becoming more in between a sort of coder and a coach. So you have like an individual coder for a match, and then the analyst is actually able to look at the data as it's sort of live, as it's coming through, and pass on any insights to the player and coaches, particularly during T20 cricket, because at the moment, obviously, the analyst is coding a lot of the time, so it's difficult to provide sort of live insights during a T20 game anyway. Obviously, championship, you get breaks, lunch and tea and end of play and things, so it's a bit easier then. That's obviously happening actually in quite a few places, and obviously you saw with England and Nathan passing on sort of information during the match. So that's really the way I see it going, in terms of, yeah, more live interaction, more data, more predictive modelling, more scenarios, greater use of artificial intelligence and machine learning, certainly the highest levels and the franchise levels. Fielding's probably another area that's probably under analyzed at the moment. Certain teams, you can code and analyze every fielding positions and field settings for each bowler. So I see that going forward as an area that's going to increase.
Absolutely. It's so interesting, isn't it? It's like this new Pandora's box has been opened in the world of cricket, and only time will tell as to, you know, the different innovations, the different improvements in the world of cricket analysis that we're going to see in the next few years. But very, very exciting times indeed. And Michael, you mentioned there two things, machine learning and artificial intelligence. I'd love to know a bit more about your thoughts on that. How do you see those impacting the world of cricket heading into the future?
Well, I think a lot at the moment, the analysis that has been done, particularly council level, is probably looking back at the last couple of years, how players have performed, whereas artificial intelligence, machine learning is more predictive modelling in terms of what players are going to do going forward. So particularly interesting in terms of recruitment. Obviously, Dan Weston's done quite a lot of work with some of his models and been very successful doing it. It's very good at doing it. So yeah, I see that certainly going forward, it's only going to increase, and probably more and more people will do that, particularly the ever-increasing franchise teams around the world. So that's going to be more and more important. And yeah, sort of scenarios, if we do X at this point in the game, what are our chances? Are our chances increasing if we bring on a certain bowler at a certain time, or are they decreasing? So I'll be using, simulations as well. It's probably an area that's going to improve.
See, that's just so interesting, isn't it? Like that to me as a cricket fan is absolutely insane. But I do just have a little bit of a devil's advocate style question actually about that, Michael, because as you can tell, listeners, we're very much into this. I absolutely love my stats, my data, my analysis. But I suppose for the purists, could you argue at that point, if we're utilizing machine learning, we're overusing data, we're utilizing artificial intelligence, is cricket more of a predetermined game as opposed to a natural game? Is it becoming something more as a product as opposed to sports? I mean, it's a very profound question to end today's podcast on. I completely understand that. But is there a danger that we are making it a little bit too manufactured per se, as opposed to just allowing games to reach and ebb and flow in a natural way?
Potentially, but I think there'll always be that human element during the game. I think, like I said, I only see it increasing, but I think you're always going to need the human element and the gut feel, and there's no way of getting around that. So games may become more sort of analytical and formulaic, I suppose, but I think it involves humans, and you need that gut feel for a decision, not just that.
That is true. It would be interesting, though, wouldn't it, in the future, let's say that you did have those predictive modelling stats at your disposal, and it says next game, if X, Y, Z happens, you're going to score 140, 150, 160, and then that actually played out. That'd be crazy, wouldn't it, as a fan? That'd be absolutely insane. So we'll have to wait and see how that develops heading into the future. But yeah, very, very exciting times in the world of data analysis and recruitment analysis as well. You mentioned Dan Weston. He is an absolutely fantastic bloke to talk to about that. We've had him on the podcast multiple times. He is a real expert in that field. And Michael, before we say our goodbyes for today's episode, just a look ahead to 2022, because Kent have recruited quite well in the off-season, let's be honest, bringing in the likes of George Linder, bringing back Case Ahmad and Matt Henry. I rate Matt Henry so highly. I know that New Zealand have got so many fantastic seam bowlers. Honestly, in another team, he would be starting in Test cricket. He's a Test-caliber bowler. What would you say to the Kent fans ahead of 2022? What can they be excited about? What should they expect heading into this upcoming season?
Oh, hopefully another very good season with a trophy. I mean, I think we're really well placed in the T20 competition again to go pretty far. Like you say, I think we've added to our team, retained everyone. So I think it's a very strong squad and very strong team with a lot of bases covered. And then, hopefully in the Red Bull, I think we've got a lot of potential. And over the last, discounting last season, two previous seasons, we've performed really, really well. And then we just had a little hiccup probably at the start of last season where things just didn't quite go to plan. Missed a few players, a few injuries, and yeah, it just didn't work out. But I think I'd like to think if we sort of stay clear of most injuries, I think we'll have another good season in the Red Bull as well, to be honest. So yeah, I think that should be pretty exciting. We've got some very, very talented young players and some talented older players as well. So yeah, I think there's a pretty good balance in the squad. The dressing room's really good. A lot of good guys in there that want to improve and talented, but they also got the hunger to sort of go one better and improve. And yeah, so I think it should be pretty excited.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I must admit, obviously, as a Warwickshire fan, I want us to be in the mix as well, but I do think Kent are contenders across format. You look at that bowling attack, and first and foremost, you have got the GOAT, Darren Stevens. Then you've got the likes of Matt Milnes, Matt Henry, Harry Podmore, who's a fantastic bowler as well. George Linder, a test-quality bowler from South Africa. You've got Case in the T20s. You've got Sam Billings in there, who can play across all formats with ease. Daniel Beldrum and Joe Denley. It's a fantastic squad. And the youngsters as well. Ollie Robinson isn't that old. Jordan Cox continues to impress. And Michael, I did say to the Kent fans, we'd talk a little bit about finals day. What was your reaction to that outrageous catch in front of the Hollies, yeah, which sent Edgbaston into raptures?
Stunned. Yeah, unbelievable. You'd not seen anything like that really before. It was just so unbelievable, unique piece of skill, really. And to do it on that stage, that's such an important period of the game as well. It makes it just even more special.
Honestly, he'll never forget that day, will he? I won't either. It felt like time stopped, didn't it, as he leapt up on the boundary. It was a remarkable bit of fielding. And to be fair, he's had a very good career so far. Jordan Cox, you think back to 2020 in the Bob Willis Trophy, had that mammoth partnership with Jack Leaning, and then 2021 performed well with the bats, the field as well. He won Kent's Fielder of the Season, if I'm not mistaken, as well. So a very, very bright prospect. And Jaz Singh as well. I really like the look of him. Good young seam bowler, strong action. Fingers crossed that he stays fit and healthy, because, again, he's another good option at the Spitfire's disposal for a number of years. But, Michael, I think that's a nice place to wrap up today's podcast. And I think it goes without saying, but I've absolutely loved it. I love talking all things data and stats analysis. I could go on for hours, but I understand you do have a life. So we'll cut the podcast here, Michael. But just before we go, do you just have anything to plug or promote? Any social media channels, websites, anything like that?
My Twitter and LinkedIn handles are putting, I try and put a bit of data analysis, some of the visualizations that I create and some of the work that I complete, I put on there. Obviously not in terms of county cricket, but in terms of other cricket that's going around the world. So yeah, put a bit on there, but don't promote myself too much.
Well, fair enough, Michael. Well, we'll leave the links to those in the podcast description below. So listeners, do go and give him a follow. Very, very interesting fella. I must admit, knows this stuff about data analysis. So if that's your thing, click on the link in the podcast description. But that is pretty much it from us two here at the County Cricket Podcast for today's episode. To all of you wonderful listeners out there, thank you very much for tuning in. And as always, guys, we'll see you on the next one.